From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the night of the Golden Globes when Oprah Winfrey lit up the crowd. Winfrey gave a rousing speech about a number of issues, not the least of which was the importance of elevating voices and speaking truth to power. Within minutes, fans jumped on social media, urging Oprah to run for president in 2020. Writing for Vox.com, Derek Clifton's piece was titled, "Oprah Winfrey and Black Women Aren't America's Cleanup Crew." Clifton wrote that demanding Oprah run for president plays into an old, tired stereotype, and I will quote from his piece now. He writes, quote, "Oprah's speech wasn't a platform for a presidential run. Defeating Donald Trump isn't her job. And the imposition on Winfrey plays into tropes of the magical Negro, a saint-like figure narrowly viewed as having transcendent superhuman power to be harnessed for coming to the rescue of white people. Nonetheless, hashtag Oprah 2020 became the next big thing, which reinforced a troubling pattern. Black women are expected to do the work of cleaning up political messes, despite living in a country that often fails to reward, respect, and protect them. As Oprah highlighted in her speech, it's work that women, like civil rights hero Recy Taylor did, a woman whose own rape case was an early moment in the civil rights era. Taylor recently died at the age of 97, having never seen justice for the racial and sexual terror she suffered at the hands of six white men in 1944. Yet instead of accepting Winfrey's poignant speech for what it was, the oratory was spun as a beacon from a beloved magic savior here to save the country from Donald Trump. But why is that her or any black woman's job?" End quote. Here in Rochester, a company called 21st Century Arts is producing a series called At the Crossroads, activating the intersection of art and justice. One upcoming installation in the series is called Black Magic Slays Magical Negro. It's designed to create a dialogue about intersectionality. And here to discuss it with me this hour is Rachel DeGuzman, president and CEO of 21st Century Arts and an artist in residence at Gallery 74. Rachel, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also here is Rena Golden Collier. Rena is co-creator of Kumba Consultants, among many other things. And Rena is here to tell us more about what's coming up here. It's great having you back. Thanks for being here, Rena.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And Nigel Gage Thorne is here. She's founder and director of Future Point Dance. Nigel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is a term, Rachel, that some people have never heard. Some people have heard and attribute, as I did in our info right off the top, to Spike Lee. But I know you said magical Negro is a term that goes back beyond Spike Lee. So let's do a little history of what we mean when we say that.
Well, what is meant generally, yes. It certainly Spike Lee made that term more known, more widely, I guess, with baby boomers and Gen Xers, about this whole notion of magical Negro and how it's really looking at a white character in a movie through the lens of a black character through the lens of what they mean or bring to white culture. But it certainly goes back. You know, it's kind of an extension of Uncle Tom, but taking it in a more positive way. Certainly, President Obama was considered a magical Negro. If you look at another recent controversy by Cornel West and Ta-Nehisi Coates, I know I'm saying his name wrong, forgive me, but about, you know, who is the person to be the source of information from the black community. It's this notion that there can be one person who actually does, and certainly the savior part of that is against America's original sin of racism. You know, how do we fix this? That's why Oprah, you know, racism and sexism and classism from where Oprah came from. So she became this source of run for against Donald Trump because all of those issues have come to the fore with his presidency. But in terms of this particular event, it's really just an interrogation of perspectives on black people, black women, even more so, through their own lens and not through a magical lens of outside and how it impacts other people. And Lemonade is certainly the focus of one of the events. And because of what it really was, a representative of the kind of work we want to do through this series.
All right, so that's some of the history. And before we go further, I want to say this. These are the kinds of conversations that we hope are enlightening. These are the kinds of conversations that Rachel is hoping that this art installation will inspire around the community. There are a number of events tied to this series coming up here. And these are the kinds of conversations we try to have every afternoon on Connections. So for just about 30 seconds, I want to bring in producer Megan Mack, just to remind our listeners, we're in day three of of our winter membership campaign, and we hope these conversations inspire and broaden our community, and we need support to do it. Hello, Megan.
Hi, Evan. You're absolutely right. And we try not to break in a lot, try not to interrupt our programming a lot, but we do it because we need your help, listeners. We need your help to keep these kinds of discussions going. We need you to pledge your support to WXXI to have us continue to invite guests like these on our program. We're rolling into our second hour now. In our first hour today, we talked about understanding the doomsday clock. We had 52 minutes to talk about that. You don't find that kind of time anywhere else in the media locally. So conversations like that, conversations about this one, important conversations about racial justice. We can do that because of you. So Evan and I are asking for your support. Tell us how important you think Connections is every day by calling 454-6300 or going online to WXXINews.org. Pledging a gift in any amount that helps us keep these conversations going. And thank you to everyone who has already called.
All right, 454-6300 to support the program right now. Thank you, Megan Mack. And as Rachel just mentioned here, there's a little bit of the history of the term. Now let's just make sure you understand what's coming up here. At the Crossroads, Activating the Intersection of Art and Justice is bringing a series of events that you ought to know. Everything happens where? All of these are happening where, Rachel?
At Gallery 74 on Tremont Street.
On Tremont Street. So let's kind of walk through the series, and then we'll talk about some of the themes if we could here. So why don't you take us through? There's four events that our listeners can know about. It opens February 9th, so we are just a couple days away. Friday is our first event.
Yes, and unfortunately, Michelle couldn't be with us today because she's teaching. She's a professor at RIT, but we're opening with an art multimedia art installation by Michelle Harris, and it has themes like flawlessly ladies can't breathe mirror, studying Lydia from birth, which is interesting because studying Lydia from Lydia was the antagonist in the original Birth of a Nation. So this is using contemporary technology and art practices to interrogate race and womanism and many of those things. So we start with that. It's a 2-hour event. And that's in dialogue with all the other events. So one of the things, her installation will change over time as she sees what Rena and Nigel do. The second event is on Saturday, and it's a long table conversation, which we did one on that was inspired by Sojourner Truth, and it was a big success, and people felt very much that it was something we should do again, so we inserted into this series too, and that is on the 10th, and that conversation is being set off by Lemonade, Beyonce's Lemonade, and then the following Saturday, Rena Golden will do a womanist spoken word piece that she can talk more about, and that's on the 17th, and then on the 24th, we end with a performance by Future Point Dance, and Nigel can talk more about that, but it's all in dialogue. All of this, it's a progressive event in that each event responds to the other that have happened before, but also they inform what happens afterwards. And so this is a real, we're trying to have also create a different model of interrogation also.
Gallery 74 on Tremont starts Friday night at 7 p.m., then Saturday 3 to 6, and then the following two Saturdays. Those are the four events with the series Black Magic Slays Magical Negro as part of their month-long exhibition. And if people want tickets, you can get a pass to all four. Is that right?
Yes, at blackmagicslays.com. brownpapertickets.com.
blackmagicslays@brownpapertickets.com. And before we kind of get into event by event, I think I want to hear from all of our guests about a question we had from a listener named Sarah. So first let me read, and it's on the question of erasure or inclusion. Marisa Cabas on NBC Think wrote the following, quote, "These fervent, often white, calls for a President Winfrey fit into a classic liberal pattern of championing black women in one breath, then voting against black women's interests in the next. Mm-hmm. April Rain, founder of the successful Oscar So White campaign, which points out the overwhelming whiteness of Hollywood's award shows, put it like this. Stop begging strong black women to be president. Michelle Obama, Oprah, whatever. It's weird. And Lord knows that when black women try to lead, y'all attempt to silence and erase us. So how would that work exactly?" End quote. But here's an email from a listener named Sarah, who heard our tease for the program this morning, and she wrote the following to me. Evan, quote, as a white woman, I don't fully understand this complaint. I want to support the cause of women of color. I want them elected to office. I want their voices leading the way. So if I call for Oprah or Michelle Obama to run for office, I'm somehow going against their interests? How does that work? All right, that's from Sarah.
Okay.
Rena, you want to start?
I'm going to say, I love the way that the first, I didn't get the quote of who.
April Rain.
April Rain. Okay. So what I love about that is the stop asking black women. I'm like, stop asking black women to do anything. How about asking black women what we want to do? And how you can support. Like, that's where I'm at right now. I'm just at this age where I'm just so over this idea of, you know, again, just the magical Negress, which is in many cases even more problematic because of you have the, you know, the black mammy. So now I'm supposed to take care of you. I'm supposed to, you know, nurse you. I'm supposed to do all these things that, you know, nurse this country back to whatever, and without ever asking at any point, what is it that you believe? What do black women believe are needed? What's needed here? And what's your role in that? How do you want to? I think we have to get to a place where we're comfortable as a country with sitting back and listening, first of all, and then being prepared to support hearing from a different type of leadership, right?
Selfless servitude. Oh. And I think that's one of the issues that exist is that it's either or too. Mm. I mean, I think that certainly and with this series, but in general, I think April was saying this too. It's not that we don't want to be inclusive. In fact, when we did the Sojourner Truth
long table
inspired mm-hmm. long table, mm-hmm. it was very racially mixed. You know, it was actually beautiful to see that. You don't see that a lot of times in Rochester. But it really was led by women of color's voices. And I think that's the whole thing that April's speaking to. It's also Beyonce. Another cultural thing that happened recently was when Beyonce performed when she was pregnant. And I think a couple of the other recipients started saying they wanted her to be their mother. Why would they want Beyonce to be their mother from her speech and from her? It's kind of a co-option of her standing out like that and not really saying what she's doing is beautiful. And she can do that to further her own perspective and agenda, not just to save people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to, kind of piggyback on what both of these lovely ladies are saying, it's a matter of being able to self-define, you know, not be, once you exhibit certain characteristics that you're not pushed into I don't know, you have to ask me if that's what I would like to do before you decide that that's who I am. And I think we are I certainly am in a process every day of still defining who I am. So it's very difficult to be pushed into specific roles that again become who I'm supposed to be, who I should be, what my strength is supposed to lead to. I'm still defining that for myself. And I think that's kind of part of what the conversation is about.
Isn't it also not to be one person? The idea that there's this monolithic leadership that happens, I mean, that's one of the things we're trying to, by bringing collaborative of people together, sort of dispel that notion, if it's about race, go to this person in town, or mm-hmm. because there are multiple perspectives and there's strength in that diversity of perspectives within the people of color perspective mm-hmm. or even women of color.
I think it's often it's easy to co-opt one, you know, the one, you know, you get the one, you put elevate the one into the position so that you can now control, you know, what the one is doing. And as opposed to looking at it as us being in a position to be leaderful, you know, we want to elevate the one leader and then now tell the leader what to do. Now I want you to do this.
And you're responsible also because, like for me, I feel I don't know. I don't know if I ever know everything or if I can ever speak to everything correctly. You know, you have to be correct if you're mm-hmm. the leader. You have to be, you know, and there's this responsibility becomes so, so huge. And I don't know if everybody or each person has that, you know, capacity to be everything for everyone.
And racism still exists. So President Obama failed.
Of course.
I mean that's the kind of onus that comes with that magical
right.
position.
We needed another
think.
One, you know, yeah.
If I could just address from being in the media position, I mean, as someone with a microphone, I think I have failed in many ways, and the media fails on occasion, even sometimes well-intended. And April Rain herself recently tweeted that she is going to be taking fewer writing jobs because she's so often asked to do it that often a white-powered media said, hey, April Rain's awesome, and she has all these things to say. Let's ask her. And then they ask her, and then somebody else asks her. And she says, okay, I feel great that you want my perspective, but there's plenty of other women of color, and I want to kind of step back a little. And she was very intentional about saying that recently, which I thought was interesting. It's a good reminder to us, people like me, who occasionally we get too myopic. And I know who we can call for one perspective or a community's perspective instead of more broadly being inclusive all the time and making sure those voices and views are represented not just through one person's voice.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Warfield says that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not speaking out of school. He says it in every place. You know, call somebody else. I mean, he also is a person that sort of rejects that position and sometimes wants to be a part of the audience, not necessarily the one who's always leading.
It's tough also because it also puts that position, that person in a position of vulnerability that they may not be comfortable with, in the sense of, you know, you're almost, it's a setup, you know, it becomes a setup where now they're the person who now has to answer for those, you know, that position as well. So you just spoke for all black women. So now, you know, you said the wrong thing, you know, like you're saying, mm-hmm. like you said the wrong thing and we don't agree with that. And now that person is being attacked, and it's a way sometimes of kind of attacking from the inside.
Right.
You know, you let the person inside, and then suddenly, you know, they come under fire, and you can sit back and be like, I didn't do it.
And watch it
this
fall
is
apart.
This is also about equitable practices. Mm-hmm. One of the things we're trying to do is really elevate multiple voices and to kind of disrupt the notion that you have one person on high creating something and co-create together and really bring in people with very powerful opinions. Everybody that's been associated with this from the beginning has their clear, they are leaders. And so to me, to bring together leaders together, you can't determine where it's going. And you have to let go of a certain element of control. But I also think it's very powerful in actually interrogating issues.
And I think when it comes to the media's habit of just turning to a narrow set of voices to be representative, sometimes it's well-intended. And there are times where I think it's pretty nefarious. And I'll give you an example. Fox News often turns to Martin Luther King's niece, who and then a pair of black women named Diamond and Silk, who are on a lot, and they are very conservative. They're very pro-Trump. Alveda King is Martin Luther King's niece. She's introduced Trump at rallies. Those are pretty much the only women of color that I see them turn to as kind of pundits. And they are always there to knock down the, you know, liberal notions. And I think they are kind of co-opted as voices to say, look, you know, this particular perspective or the president is right. And I don't think anyone in that newsroom is saying, I don't know, should we broaden this out? Should we have more voices? I think they're saying, find women of color who are going to go a certain direction, and that will be the counterpoint. Whereas people like me, I fail all the time, but I try to get my head around criticism and get my head around what can we do better and how can we broaden voices and how we can we include perspectives. So that's one view of how the media is interacting. And I want to turn now to what's happening in the art world, because that's also what this installation is talking about. So you mentioned the first couple of exhibits coming up as part of this series. Let's talk about the third, and that's, I think the third is Rena's, right, Rena?
Is that the third one?
The 17th.
February 17th,
yes.
That's a Saturday. And
yes.
Again, it's all at the same place. Where is it?
215 Tremont.
Gallery 74.
Gallery 74, yes.
So the third
which
event
is a beautiful space. Sometimes people are unfamiliar, you know,
yeah,
with
Ralph
certain
Thompson.
Areas, you know, of the city and whatnot. This is a gorgeous space, a gorgeous loft space with beautiful, you know, natural light. And it's a beautiful gallery. So I'm so excited that it's going to be in that space again, because and all of the things that Rachel is also working with Ralph to make happen in that space.
All right, so what's coming up on Saturday the 17th?
Okay, so for me, I mean, many people are familiar with my work. It doesn't, this is very much in line with the work that I do specifically for myself as a Black woman, my own personal art, aside from the work that I do with youth, but not really. For me, I really am looking at, in this case, exploring the challenges and triumphs of navigating this battle that that women, specifically Black women, find ourselves in response to the legacy of the magical Negro or magical Negress, the Black mammy. Again, I will refer back to that because it's so often that we find ourselves in these positions, even in the art world, where people are looking for you to be somebody's mama, in this space. So you become mama somebody, instead of, being looked at not that mothers are not powerful, but in a space to actually have something to say that pushes a message, an agenda, that means, making change in the world. Often it's a way to sort of co-opt your spirit, your personality, everything, kind of bring you into, okay, now how can you help me versus what is it that you want to contribute? So I want to use this opportunity to use my words to explore femininity as a divine power. Of course, not one that's about biology, but more about the creative spirit, fertility, and birthing, the energy that does nurture and sustain, but also, the force, that can be, that creation as a force, just a powerful force, in the world. So that's where I'm at for this one. And it'll be poetry and, spoken word. It's my thing. And we're gonna, and interactive in some ways too, because I really believe in call and response, the dialogue that's happened between the audience or the participant and the artist.
Can you indulge a super ignorant question, Rena?
Yeah, sure.
When I see, really great spoken word, I mean, it can be riveting. And I find myself wondering, is it improvised? Is it pre-written? Do you come up with sort of a frame in your mind?
Thank you for asking that.
I truly don't know.
Thank you so much for asking that. So spoken word is not freestyle. Freestyle is a specific form in itself. I'm not a freestyle poet at all. I may be a freestyle speaker because I love to talk, but no, it is absolutely written. My work goes through a serious process. I think mostly because I don't just leave it on the page because I'm actually taking the stage with it. My creative process is maybe in some ways a little bit more intensive than page poets, those who limit their work to the page, and even if they do share it orally, it's more in the form of a reading and not expected to be performative and add on those other dimensions. So there's even with my students, I really take them through a whole process that's about the writing process, the editing process, and then the performance process, which all is, is pretty intense. It's not stage ready, until it's page ready, And so that's definitely written, definitely written.
Do you find yourself at times creating something on the page that you really like, but then when you go to deliver it, when you're kind of working on it, you think it doesn't work the way I thought, or I'm going to hone this. This has got to change. I don't like this flow here.
Well, I hear my voice in my writing. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that distinguishes specifically spoken word artists. We're writing in our everyone writes in their heads before they actually put it down in the medium. But we hear the voice and your own cadence, your own rhythm when you're writing. And in fact, I have to sometimes try to tune that out, turn that off, so that I, especially in the editing process, it's not, I don't want it to get, into I'm already performing the piece in my head, because then you it takes away from editing. So for me, it really is still about, curating the work for that particular space. So you have a body of work and you decide what is it that you want to present in that space. And the part that may be somewhat improvised for those who have a large body of work is it could be inspired by something that's happening in that moment. And so you may share. So many spoken word poets keep kind of a repertoire of pieces that they have, you know, committed to memory, and they are performance ready so that they can be flexible in that way.
All right, so A Womanist Spoken Word presentation by Rena is on Saturday the 17th of February at Gallery 74 as part of this series, and it starts at 5 p.m., goes to 7 o'clock, and on that kind of an evening, what kind of is there a kind of conversation? Or are there, do you know what you're hoping to spark? Is it sometimes, you know, I'm sure it happens organically. These kind of conversations need to happen organically, and sometimes there's great moments. Sometimes there's uncomfortable moments. But do you have a hope in your mind of what it can bring?
I think that's what we want. I do something called behind the fourth wall, and that's a philosophy for the way I approach performance always. And it really is about creating an opportunity for organic dialogue to happen between audience and artists and back and forth. So it's you know, you kind of break through that, you know, fourth wall in theater and say, I want you to engage with this work, right? And I'm going to leave myself open to engaging with you around this work as well. So, yeah.
And part of the evening will also be, so the multimedia art installation will still be there. And so the people will be experiencing that. Michelle Harris has said that she's going to respond to Rena too. So they may change somewhat in the space. So it's a dialogue and conversation between people, between artists, two audiences, but it also is between artists. And I think that's something that's pretty exciting about this type of progressive event. You know, and then we have time between each, with a week, you know, a week apart, to really process and sort of have that dialogue take root a little bit more than if we did it all in one day.
Keeping in mind that some of that is energetically more so than verbally. So
absolutely.
Again, that's where the black magic comes in. You know, some of this exchange is definitely about an energy exchange in that dialogue.
All right, so the fourth event is a dance performance by Future Point Dance. We're going to get our only break of the hour. We'll come back, talk about what's going on February 24th, also at 5 p.m., and that's the fourth event in this installation. We'll also answer a question. A listener wants to know, you talk about intersectionality. Could your guests explain what that is? And the listener says, I'm not sure everyone knows what it is or if everyone has the same thing in mind when we hear intersectionality. It's a good question. So let's hit that after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, bail reform. What changes should be made to the system? Who's going to jail and why? And what are the inequities in the system? We explore it with our panel discussion in the first hour. In our second hour, Eddie Money joins us in studio. He has a new musical, and it's in Rochester. If I could walk on water, I'd find some way to prove that the star is actually on the show. He is. Talk to you Thursday. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Listener just wants the definition of intersectionality, pointing out that some of our listeners might not know what it is, or maybe not everyone has the same thing in mind. So let's go around the table, Rachel. How do you describe intersectionality?
Well, in the first long table conversation, we actually screened Kimberly Crenshaw's TED Talk on intersectionality. And so I think that my definition of it is close to hers. It's something someone can look up. It's really a fascinating TED Talk, but it is the whole idea that you, as we're dealing with issues of being a person of color or a race, we're also dealing with the a factor of sex. So race plus sex changes things, and she goes through a whole very clear litany of what that means. But if you have policies at an organization that are pro-man and pro-black, that doesn't necessarily benefit a woman, a black woman, for instance. So, and that can be true if you're LGBTQ. It can be and a person of color. It's these areas of intersectionality that cause a lot of the hashtags. There's been a hashtag is so, you know, gay is so white, for instance. And so, it's the idea that you can't separate someone's struggles or their oppression that comes to them from their race, which causes a difference sometimes between white feminists sometimes and women of color, because they're also dealing with issues of race. And that goes back to times of Sojourner Truth and Susan B. Anthony. And so it's this whole idea of something plus something else, and in this case, race and sex, specifically to what we're trying to interrogate with Black Magic Slaves Magical Negro. And it's the reason why Lemonade, for instance, really resonated so strongly with Black women.
Okay, Rena?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that definition wholeheartedly. I think immediately what comes to mind for me from a personal standpoint is that I am many things, so you don't get to define what my struggle is or what I'm struggling with in those things, right? And the idea that there's also complexity, to me as an activist, as an artist specifically. So you can't just say, because I'm a Black woman, these are my issues, or that I must believe this because I'm Black, or because I'm a woman. And so there's many things that go into my actual struggle, and that allows us, in my opinion, to be able to relate to each other's struggles in different ways, mm-hmm. because it's not placed into a specific box of, okay, these are women's issues. Okay, so this is your thing, right? And so that's very different than men's issues. Well, not necessarily if we're talking about Black men and I have a Black son.
Black Lives Matter, right?
Right. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Complexity. So Black, sure, but and what? It intersects with other things. There are different things that come in to make a unique web for almost everyone of what that means. So it's I think it's also still being defined in some ways. Like, people are recognizing where those things meet, how those things create the individual struggle as well.
A couple weeks ago, we had a discussion on this program after the 2018 women's marches around the country, and took a phone call from a woman who identified herself as a white listener. We had some women of color on the program who explained their concern that the movement is still largely beholden and sort of serving white women's issues. Mm-hmm. And one of the points they made on the program is there's a widespread belief among, and again, I'm trying to summarize, please understand the phone call and the discussion, but there's a concern that women of color tend to have, which is that, let's say Hillary Clinton had won the election, would white women be showing up to march? Would they be showing up to demonstrate, to advocate? And is it always just reproductive health, or does this look at other issues within a quote-unquote women's movement? What does a true inclusive women's movement look like? And there was a phone call from a woman who identified herself as a white listener, and it was one of the longer phone calls we took because we wanted to at least allow for an exploration. And there were some uncomfortable moments where the woman who called said, she's frustrated that she feels like she's being attacked for, not being pure enough or not being, I think, understanding enough. And she basically said, look, I may not have woken up fully the day I was born understanding these issues, but I'm trying to get there. And if there's too much strife within the movement, we're going to take each other apart. And I think generally speaking, the women in studio said, it's not about you. and it's not about if you're uncomfortable with criticism. And so I don't know if there was any resolution, but I think it did signify some of the occasional fissures that have been going on and conversations going on right now.
Right. Rachel? And I think that's one of the things we're trying to do. I mean, we're trying to really have a way to have these conversations. And that speaks to something from my perspective called white fragility. And but then you have facts. Look at Alabama with Roy Moore. If you did not, even though the majority of women voted for, and I can't, what's his name?
Doug Jones.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Even though without Black women, that would not have happened. And still the majority of white women in this country, even educated women, voted for Donald Trump.
Especially educated, professional
right. And women. And so that's something that has to be reconciled by them. We can't reconcile. We don't own that. That's something that white feminists have to own. And so there might be marches now, but that's something that has to be resolved in-house. And, so we can't speak to that. We can only speak to the fact that that exists. And so that's an objective fact, not, and what that means they have to interpret. But I also think that to say that out loud isn't to attack someone per se. It's to say that this is what happened. And, you know, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so I don't want to speak for the caller. I will just say, after that program, more than just about any other moment we've had in a long time, I had people come up to me or email and say, wow, that moment, you know, and people in very different directions, and people on sort of different sides of an argument. So listeners, if you want to respond to some of what you're hearing, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And I think that this series that is starting on Friday could engender more conversations like that, could lead to those kinds of conversations. Rena, does it matter to you if people are uncomfortable or comfortable with those kinds of moments and those kinds of discussions?
I think I'm very clear about, you know, my position when I'm in those spaces and those conversations that not only am I not there to make you feel comfortable with my struggle, it's in some ways counterproductive for me to do so. So I'm gonna have to take a step back and let you sit with your fragility, you know, your discomfort, and still remind you that that's the reason for intersectionality as a concept, you know, and as a practice, understanding and appreciating the intersectionality of all of our struggles, is to say that, right, that's why, and right now this is why you feel uncomfortable, but I feel uncomfortable with your discomfort, because I'm simply stating that my struggle is different than your struggle right now. So we can't make it all the same thing.
That's the part that I think, and again, I got to be careful trying to overly generalize or sum up, but there were a number of white women who emailed me after the program and articulated some kind of a view that said, aren't we all on the same team? Don't we believe in these causes together? And if we are not united, we're going to get beat at the ballot box. We're not going to be able to move the country in the direction that we want, and that we may not all be in perfect lockstep, but isn't this essentially all the same team? What, generally speaking, Rena, do you agree with that or disagree?
I would say that we're only on the same team when you do make space for me to make a case for the places where we're not on the same team. So if we're saying that we have to somehow zoom out so far that we lose sight of our individual concerns, issues, problems, then we're not on the same team. If we can't bring that focus back to say, wow, this is something that is hurting or plaguing Black women, and so therefore it's a women's issue. And so, you know what? Let's talk about that. Let's fight for that. Let's march for that.
And you had the issue with Lena Dunham, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where she actually was so outspoken about hashtag Me Too, sexual harassment, and how it's coming to the fore. But a biracial former member of staff accused someone, a white male on her staff, of harassing her. And she said she believes them. So believe all
she
women.
Believes the man in that case.
Believe the man in that case. And I only mention that to say that that's what we experience all the time. And so you can't be on the same team if you don't recognize that, first of all, racism exists and it's impacting us in compounding the oppression that we experience. It's not in allegiance with the oppression that white women experience, even though I do agree they are oppressed because of misogyny.
Nigel, you want to weigh in on that too?
Well, something resonated with me, and it's about being uncomfortable. And I work with the body all the time, and it's my job to make you uncomfortable sometimes, because it's in a room, you know, especially if we're doing something like improvisation, because some people are very unsettled by not knowing, you know, everything that's going on, or knowing what's happening. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. And it, a lot of times it brings out, you learn so much from that moment that sometimes I think some people, yeah, you're uncomfortable. So just deal with that, own that, and see what you can learn from that situation. You know, uncomfortableness, is that a word, is so useful and so important, especially in this particular conversation, which is kind of what I'm going to bring with me to this installation, about how to resolve that and figure out what it's saying to you, rather than always trying to just get rid of it. It's like pain. It's like if you just take an aspirin sometimes, you know, painkiller, you never know what the problem underlying is. Like, you have to sit with that, recognize that that's what's going on and that something is speaking through that. You know what I'm saying? So get over your, you're uncomfortable. That's good.
So let's talk about what's coming up on February 24th.
It's billed as a performance, but it's kind of fluid, and that term is not exactly what is happening, because it's a performance kind of sometimes means outward, and this is kind of, I'm taking the liberty of making it a little bit more inward. I'm presently on a journey of learning, especially from all these artists and women around me, because I realize how much I do not know, you know, I do not understand that perspective also. So I'm inside, but I'm also aware that I have lots to learn and simultaneously have lots to speak about. But in this case, I'm going to take advantage of the reaction element, especially because I'm going to sit with all of this art and on all these voices that are around me, and I'm really going to look for a kind of channeling that's for myself and the other participants in the dance piece, where we're going to try to channel just, you know, something from the ground up, right through our feet, coming through the cells in our body, and let it. It's nonverbal, which is difficult for some people, uncomfortable for some people, because it's not specific. It doesn't say exactly what is happening. You may get a different view of what is happening, but the body is like that. And I love this medium because it does make people a little bit like challenged to stretch their imaginations as to what is being felt, what is being said, what is being, you know, what is this word? Just like, you know, what is being pulled together. And So that reaction thing is going to be a big theme for me in terms of the installation, the concept that the producer Rachel is coming up with, Rena's, you know, spoken word. What are those things going to pull up through my body? And some people, they're so cerebral, they don't realize that the body is a very good way to inform what's happening. And I mean, this is not a cerebral conversation only, meaning the racial, this whole thing that's happening in our nation. It's not only cerebral. There's a feeling behind it.
Absolutely.
There's an energy behind it. There's an ancestral, you know, there's a vibe. We have lots of words for this. There's a natural mystic. There's a vibe. There's so many things. And it's important to kind of understand that those elements come into it as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is starting at 5 p.m. on Saturday, February 24th, and then the experience is going to culminate in an interactive conversation. That's right, Rachel? Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I think, you know, I struggle with the word talk back, because I come from the presenting world of the traditional presenting world, and that's when people are on stage and they're sitting, you know, in a line and they talk. And I think we're going to adopt the circle more and have everybody that's there be able to participate in the conversation and certainly ask questions, but also contribute to it. So this is in keeping with the whole theme throughout of being in dialogue. Mm-hmm. And we are going to, and it isn't a linear presentation, and none of it is. And to a large degree, I want to emphasize we're experimenting. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that you hear about as vital in you know, solar panels or, you know, in anything else, but you don't really hear about so much in how to connect art to social practice and social justice. And I think this is an experimentation. What works and speaks to us and the people that come will take on to the next event. What doesn't will sort of reject. Like the last long table conversation was 4 hours. We shaved an hour. We didn't need 4 hours. Mm-hmm. It was very poignant, but can be poignant in three. So we're learning, and I think we're learning. We have something to say, but we're also learning with the people in the room. So mm-hmm. That's very powerful, and it's been very rewarding thus far, and we're kind of seeing where it goes.
Absolutely, and that's how art is made.
All right, so four events. Single event tickets are $15, but you can get an all-access pass for $40 online. blackmagicslays.brownpapertickets.com. It all starts Friday night, the 9th, at Gallery 74. That's 215 Tremont Street. So the 9th, this Friday, then Saturday the 10th, Saturday the 17th, Saturday the 24th. Got a couple of listener comments that I think, in the spirit of embracing conversations that may be tough at times. Mm-hmm. Let's read these comments.
Certainly.
And let's go ahead and do this. So Deborah writes the following. She says, we need to work on improving our connections and respect that while we fight the maniac in the White House, I thought panelists of, and she was referring to last month's show about the Women's March, were often snarky and dismissive, especially when one of them said, don't talk, just listen. Don't ask questions, just listen. Really? Like women haven't heard enough of that from men. Many of those who fought for civil rights are just like me, white and now suburban and old, and they think they're tired? She showed such a lack of understanding or appreciating the history of the civil rights movement. You want us to follow you? That was not what leadership sounds like. Please don't work to fracture the solidarity that women have achieved this year. We were there for you. You just may be too young to remember. That's from Deborah. Now, Jane just called in to say the following. She says when she went to the march downtown in Rochester, when she went to the events downtown following the events in Charlottesville last year after the alt-right, the white supremacist march, she says there were several different African-American women speakers who were vitriolic about how white women from the suburbs were there, and they didn't want to hear from white women from the suburbs. In this discussion, the guests are calling it discomfort, but at that event, it was divisiveness. And Jane went on to say she's Jewish. She felt affected by the Charlottesville events, so she and her daughters wanted to participate in the downtown Rochester event in response, and she says the African-American women there made them feel uncomfortable, unwelcome. She says everyone has their own struggle. Why not support people who are there? Trying to create change and be there for everyone. So that's two women, suburban white women, saying roughly the same thing here. Let's discuss it.
I just want to say something really quickly. I appreciate their comments and that they're engaging in the conversation, but I'm not sure everybody does have the same struggle. And I think that to be black, brown, Muslim, an immigrant right now in America is a very unique position. To be in. And I think that the assumption that we have the same struggle means that probably there should be some listening that happens. I'm not going to be shut up or anything. That's not my place to say that. But I'm saying that there needs to be some learning. There are stories, there are perspectives that are not represented in this country or people who are marginalized beyond being a woman.
I think Jane is saying everyone has their own struggle, and she felt like she was told, shut up, because you're white from the suburb.
But if you, let's just take The Help, which is not my favorite movie, but if you want to use that as an illustration of white women telling black women that they can't speak, it's ahistorical to say that there hasn't been an element of shut up and
of
that
silencing.
Listen now of silencing black, brown women. And so when they say listen now, it is affirming their need to be heard. And really in this whole conversation of oppression to say listen to our unique perspective here and don't marginalize us. We had a whole interrogation of the women's movement last year, and there was very little talk of Sojourner Truth, which inspired the event to be created that was created. And she talked about Ain't I a Woman. She wasn't just speaking to men, she was speaking to white women. So when people tell you to listen, certainly there's a delivery, people have different deliveries. And I think also, if they're angry, I think they might have a reason to be angry. And I'll.
Yeah, I think what we are saying is it's about how you listen. And sometimes, like Nigel talked about, you have to listen through your discomfort, right? And then you also have to become challenge yourself to become more comfortable with elevating voices that are being marginalized, have been marginalized more than yours, more than yours. When I'm in a space that I'm creating for youth to elevate youth voice, I do shut up. I do. And there's a whole bunch of things that I may want to say. There's a whole bunch of things that I may not agree with that they're saying. I may have some historical references that I want to interject and I want to talk about. Me too. I also have experienced this and that. But when I'm in those spaces and I am able to shut up or just quiet down and listen differently, listen in a way that allows their voices to be elevated as the primary voices in those spaces. And we have to become more comfortable with that, those of us who are in positions of power, or if you're in a position of privilege, in that scenario, as an adult, I'm in a more privileged position
Absolutely.
Than those youth in that moment. So why not take a moment to step back? Because everybody, you know, many people want to hear what I have to say, but do they want to hear what these youth have to say? So I relinquish my privilege in those moments.
Okay. Dijon?
Sometimes everything isn't a perfect kumbaya. You know, like, we can't resolve things, and that's okay. It's okay if it's not, you know, we're not marching in tandem and peaceful. I mean, and there are people who can tell you how to go forward when everything isn't perfect. And I think that's something we can learn from various, you know, sections of the population. How to continue, even when I feel like, me too, you didn't hear what I said. And I'm not saying it in a way that, you know, that says, of course, everybody's in, you only have one perspective. It's your own. And of course, each are important. But as Rena says, like, how you listen, and I had mentioned too, like, let's listen also from not only our ears, not only our eyes, but, like, can we sense what is going on also? And can we sense what is needed? It, you know, direction, great leaders sometimes can have, you know, can sense through their cells how we should take this, how we can move forward, combining everyone's, you see, words are limited. Words are limited to, you know, facts are limited. It's all very, we have to understand how to take a nonverbal and a kind of like, what's that word? You know, just a way to see how the energies work together as well, and realize we have to listen in a different way.
Well, the conversation is going to continue. First of all, on this broadcast, we're committed to having these dialogues and discussions, and we will certainly continue to discuss what the women's rights movement means, and what intersectionality means, and what these discussions bring. So that'll be happening on this program. It's also happening at the Crossroads exhibition, Black Magic Slays Magical Negro. 4 events starting this Friday. Jump online at blackmagicslays.brownpapertickets.com, and you can meet the people who are right here on this program starting Friday night. Rachel DeGuzman, President and CEO of 21st Century Arts, thanks for being here. We appreciate your
time. Thank you so much, Evan, for having this show.
Rena Golden Collier, co-creator of Kumba Consultants. Thank you, Rena. Always good to have you.
Thank you.
Nichelle Gage Thorne, founder and director of Future Point Dance, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to everyone else behind the glass. I'm Evan. Talk to you Thursday.